So good morning, everybody. I'm happy to be here talking about some grant programs. I've got quite a bit of information to go over today, somewhat at a high level. So one of the takeaways I'll talk about when I finish, but a takeaway before I start to keep in mind is that UBCM and the staff that run these programs, we are a resource for you. So whenever there is a question, whether you direct it towards staff or yourself, by all means, that's what we're there for, to help get through the process and help you understand some of these grant programs and how to be successful within the program. So by all means, use us as a resource. So before I start, I just want to get a sense of, is everyone a newly elected official here? So we're all returning. Hands up for new? Okay, so about 50-50. And since we got such a small group, I might as well ask right away where you're from, because, I mean, it will help me as I talk through, particularly on the gas tax side and some of the program side. So Coquitlam? Pitt Meadows? Terrace? Fort St. John? Yeah. District of North Vancouver? Victoria? Bowen Island? Dawson Creek? Coquitlam? And in the back there? You're the next presenter in the room. Well, welcome. Okay, presentation overview. I'm going to spend probably most of my time today talking about the gas tax fund and the renewed gas tax fund. I want to spend a little bit of time talking about local government program services. So it's an area within UBCM where we provide administration for a number of other smaller grant programs that are available to local government. And then talk about the new Building Canada Fund, in particular the Small Communities Fund, which is available for communities under 100,000 in population. Talk a little bit in general about that as well. Now, that program is not administered by UBCM. That's administered by the province. So the gas tax fund. So last year we signed a renewed agreement. It was a tripartite agreement with the federal government and the province. It took effect in April 1st. The actual signing, I believe, was May 22nd. So the term of this agreement is... the term of this agreement is 10 years, so it runs from 2014 to 2024. Sorry. And great. Thanks. And so the program is estimated over the life of the program to be about $2.76 billion. It's identified. We talk about the first 5 years. The actual funding and the allocation nationally is dependent upon the census, recognizing that it will be a new census in 5 years. We really talk about the first 5 years of the program, which is $1.3 billion. So as with the previous program, or the previous agreement, UBCM maintains the administrative role. This is fairly unique in the country. Only BC and Ontario have their municipal associations administering the program. Everywhere else, it's the actual provincial government that administers the program. I think, as an ex-provincial employee, looking into how this program has been administered, you should be very happy that in BC you have UBCM running this program. It actually, I believe, increases the transparency and actually the efficiency of how this program is being run. So you're in a very good spot to be in BC. And that's not me just patting UBCM on the back, but this is me as an ex-provincial employee trying to deal with these grant programs at a provincial and a federal level, and just seeing that the way it's run at the UBCM level. So with the new agreement, there was some concerns historically with the past agreement. UBCM went out to membership did a survey, got input back from all local governments. There was probably three, I would probably summarize it as three main themes of concerns. One was try to ensure that we've got a long-term agreement, so a long-term commitment to funding. That was done. We've got a 10-year agreement, but we also have gas tax being legislated to be continuous, right? A second theme, a second concern was sort of the narrower scope of project categories. Local government wanted to utilize this money for a much broader broader types of projects. And the third piece was try to streamline some of the programming. Grant programs naturally are very complex, convoluted, and overly bureaucratic, and you know, just wrought with process. We have managed to actually sort of streamline some of the programs within the gas tax. So the new agreement has some successes and some improvements to it from the old one. So I just want to go over some of the key areas that have changed that will have some impact on how gas tax is used in the province. This slide talks about the funding. So the funding over the first 5 years, it's 1.3 billion over the first 5 years. You'll see in year three and year five that there's a bump, and that's reflective of a piece that's changed within the agreement is indexing. So the fund is actually indexed at 2% per year. Under the agreement, that indexing is put back into the funding package or the funding portfolio in increments of $100 million. So once it reaches $100 million, it goes back into the fund and then is redistributed through the jurisdiction. So that's why we see in year three and year five, and it'll be a continuous increase every time there's $100 million reached in indexing. So that's a positive in the program as well, a positive change. So eligible categories, it went from basically six project categories to 18. So a very broad scope of projects are now eligible under the program. For those that were involved in the previous program, these were what were considered eligible in the previous agreement. I refer to these as probably the core services or the core infrastructure that local government provide. Basically focused on water and wastewater, solid waste, green energy or energy and transportation. So new eligible categories, I'll go over these briefly. Some may have some interest or importance in your local government. Others may not. I mean, I don't think there's probably a lot of interior communities that are going to be interested in short sea shipping. But you never know. So anyway, these are some of the categories that are eligible now: local and regional airports, short sea shipping, short line rail, sport infrastructure, tourism infrastructure, and cultural infrastructure. We certainly heard from local governments with their interest to, in many areas, to be able to use some of the gas tax funding for projects of this nature. Brownfield redevelopment. Not necessarily a huge a need by local government, but it is now available. Particularly some of the larger urban local governments may have some interest in this. Broadband connectivity is certainly an area where some of the rural communities, some of the rural and smaller communities have had a lot of interest in trying to get this as an eligible category. Recreation infrastructure and disaster mitigation. These are another two that we certainly heard from local governments that there is a need for infrastructure funding for these types of projects. One of the things that we're continuing to work with the federal government is to further define these categories. There's still some questions out there of what's eligible and what's not eligible. For instance, when we looked at disaster mitigation, a lot of local governments are interested in projects that really reflect probably a disaster response type infrastructure. The federal government has identified that is not eligible. So fire trucks, fire halls, that sort of thing, not eligible under this program. I guess a point and a takeaway for this is if you do have a project, you do have some concerns about its eligibility, the thing to do is to contact us, and we can work through a process with you. And if we don't have the answer, we can certainly talk to our federal colleagues and make sure you get the answer that you need to determine whether your project is eligible or not. Capacity building is another piece. Capacity building was eligible in the other program, in the other agreement. Under the new agreement, it's expanded. Under the new agreement, asset management is identified as a priority. And so asset management planning is part of capacity building. Long-term infrastructure planning, so those are your traditional water master plan, liquid waste management plan, that type of work. And then integrated community sustainability planning, any kind of sort of long-term planning, land use planning, regional growth strategies, OCPs, kind of fit in that category. So another change, as I mentioned, is streamlined program delivery. Gone is the tiering system. So the tier one, tier two, tier three, that doesn't exist anymore. And we've got three program areas now, Community Works, which every local government now is eligible for. So in the previous agreement, Metro Vancouver member municipalities were not eligible for Community Works funds. Now there is a carve-out for Community Works funds for Metro Vancouver communities. Strategic Priorities Fund, which is an application-based, merit-based program, which is available for those communities outside of Metro Vancouver. And then the Greater Vancouver Regional Fund, which is a fund which is transportation-focused and entirely within the Greater Vancouver Regional District. So here's a little graph that just sort of identifies the distribution of funding. So the funding is based on a per capita allocation. So the Greater Vancouver Regional Fund represents about 49% of the funding available. Community Works Fund is 40%, and then the remainder goes to the Strategic Priorities Fund. If we look a little differently at program delivery and how it's distributed, so within the GVRD and member municipalities, 5% of their per capita allocation goes to Community Works Fund, 95% goes to the GVRF, which is the Transportation Fund. All other local governments, it's 75% for Community Works Fund and 25% to the Strategic Priorities Fund. So a little bit about the Community Works Fund. excuse me. Trying to get rid of a cold that just doesn't seem to want to go away. So the Community Works Fund is a direct allocation to local governments. So this allocation goes out twice a year. At this point in time, I think we have every local government who has now signed an agreement. So we have a contribution agreement for the Community Works Fund that every local government has signed. It's based on a per capita basis with the funding floor. So every local government receives the funding floor of $50,000 and then bumped up based on the population within your community. As I mentioned, that's based on 2011 census, and it will be updated with the new census in 2016. The piece about this program is the funding goes to local governments. Local governments make their own decisions on where the money is spent based under the funding agreement, which really, I mean, the two main areas are A, the funding is spent on an eligible project, and it's eligible costs that are incurred. And other than that, it's really up to the local government to determine their priorities and how to use this money. So the Greater Vancouver Regional Fund, for those people within the Metro Vancouver. So this is a pooled funding program for projects within the GVRD. Projects are submitted by TransLink and approved by the GVRD board. This is all established within the agreement, the actual framework agreement. At this point in time, the agreement identifies that these projects must be identified as transportation-related projects. I think for the first 5 years of the program, it's estimated it's about $650 million under the program will go to this fund. when I go back to the Community Works Fund, I think it's $514 million in the first 5 years for that. And so the third funding stream is a Strategic Priorities Fund. So this, as I mentioned before, is an application. Sorry, question?
Just back to that fund.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's correct.
So, just explain a little bit further. So we don't see it as a city, or like it says pooled. Does that mean pooled as a region?
It's pooled as a region. And during the development of the agreement, there was discussions with the GVRD and member municipalities on how to spend this money. And so it was identified that, a priority was transportation. So it's pooled in the sense that it's designed for transportation projects within the Metro Vancouver Regional District.
So as a councillor, I'm not necessarily going to be making decisions about that 95% because that's maybe the higher level and the level.
That's right. So the 95% focused on transportation is decided, and that's already firmed up within the agreement, so it's identified within the agreement. The process of how projects will move forward and be approved by the GVRD board. My understanding is I think at the last GVRD Metro Vancouver board meeting, they established a committee and a chair to deal with the projects under the gas tax program. So. That is correct. So, Strategic Priorities Fund, as I mentioned, application-based. It supports investments in infrastructure that are large in scale, regional in impact, and innovative. So, because of the pooled nature, it is a merit-based program. Therefore, applications are assessed and evaluated based on this criteria, so larger in scale, regional impact, and innovative. Along with other criteria, and I'll get to it a little bit about national objectives. So when you have a project that you think is going to be moving forward under this program, it's really important to understand how that project sort of aligns with the criteria that it'll be evaluated against. So, because those projects that meet the criteria the best are the ones that'll get approved. So there's an open intake right now, so we are accepting applications. It's three applications per local government. Two of those applications could be capital, so for capital infrastructure projects, one for capacity building. The intake closes April 15th. I would assume we have not made a decision, and those decisions are made within a body which is called the Management Committee, was that? The Partnership Committee. Thank you, Gary. The Partnership Committee, which makes the decisions on how many intakes and when those intakes will be. We're assuming there'll probably be at least three intakes, so there'll be at least another two intakes in the future. We don't have the dates for those. So right now, we have an intake, and it closes on April 15th, probably expecting there's a process evaluation, approvals, so approvals and announcements will be probably sometime in the fall. So I just talked about national objectives. With the change in the agreement, the expansion of the project categories come changes with national objectives. So these are sort of objectives that you have to keep in mind as you identify projects, ensuring that these projects are meeting these national objectives. In the previous agreement, it was really all about clean environment. It was cleaner air, cleaner water, and reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. With the expansion of the categories, the eligible project categories, has come some additional national objectives. Some people have asked, well, what does this mean? And that is an extremely good question. The federal government really hasn't defined what productivity and economic growth means. It hasn't really defined what strong cities and communities mean either, right? We kind of have definitions of what a clean environment means because we're using the previous information from the previous agreement. So it is a little bit wide open. But I think that just allows us to be a little, you know, think outside the box when we're thinking about projects to move forward. So outcomes reporting, not necessarily a big concern for you as elected officials, certainly a big concern for your staff. It's a big piece for us, and it actually is a big piece for the program and the continuing of the program, recognizing that these programs are audited, and to ensure that they are providing value, they have to be seen in meeting the objectives, goals and objectives that are established within the program. So we have outcome reporting as under your Community Works Fund agreement. You have to report every year on the money spent and the projects that it's been spent on. We have outcome reportings in 2018 and 2024, which look at actually measuring the performance of the program. So what are the actual outcomes? And I've got the last bullet there that talks about asset management planning. Asset management, as I mentioned earlier, is become an integral part of this program. Local governments are going to be required to make a commitment for moving forward with asset management. What that commitment looks like will be identified probably in the next few months, and we'll be getting some information out to local governments. The approach that we're taking is we've recognized that there is a commitment for local governments to move forward with asset management. What we are trying to do is have it an approach where it's sort of self-directed from within local government, so it's not prescribed. It's not a prescribed way of moving forward. It's sort of just accepting that, yes, we'll move forward with asset management, and this is how we're going to move forward. But stay tuned in the next few months. There'll be some more information about that. Well, it's aging infrastructure. It's sort of moving with best practice with respect to financial management and infrastructure management, right, and service delivery. You know, asset management is becoming something that I think has been identified as an important tool and an important process for local governments or anyone who's managing infrastructure or service to move forward with. The federal government has identified it as a priority, as has the province. As far as a hint in how it's going to roll out, this is the sort of the high-level succinct version of it. Step one will be sort of a self-evaluation. So local governments will be required to sort of identify where they're at with asset management. My assumption and my desire is to really basically have a template, right? So a template will be handed out to local governments. It'll identify and answer some questions, right, where you're at with asset management. That'll sort of provide the baseline information, so where we're at with asset management. Step two will be identify what are some of the initiatives with moving asset management forward. As a local government, are you prepared to do over the life of the agreement? So what are you going to do with respect to moving asset management forward over the next 10 years? So self-defined. Sorry, you had a question? That's right. So we're actually working with the province and an organization called Asset Management BC. You have a staff member who's the co-chair of that organization. Who is a leader in asset management. So anyway, so step two will be, what is the implementation plan? What are you going to do to improve asset management? For some local governments, it'll be some small steps because they're already very active. For some other local governments, it'll be just, you know, some of the real foundational pieces, right? And step three is actually report out in 2018 and 2024 on moving forward. So, no, that hasn't been the approach. And you know, I've been dealing with asset management from the provincial perspective for the last 10 years in my previous job, and the province isn't taking that perspective on it either. It's more of a education, bottom-up approach. It's not like a top-down, thou shalt do this. I mean, I think what we've seen is that approach has been taken elsewhere with very limited success. And there's actually been a lot of success in BC, just with local governments understanding that, hey, it's a good thing to do. Let's do it. So how do you support that, right? So this is, I think, hopefully just a support tool for local government to move forward. Yeah. Transition. I'm just going to skip this slide. It probably has no bearing to you. Really, all it talks about is the fact that if you've got unspent money from the previous agreement, it now falls under the new agreement. So if you haven't used all your money, you get to use it on the expanded project categories, which is probably a good thing. Interest, this is just a note. The funding, as we said, look, UBCM administers this program. The funding comes from the federal government to us. We put it in an account, and then we start distributing this money to local governments through the various program areas. Over time, we've generated some interest in our account. We've got about $8 million right now. And with that $8 million over the next 2 years, we're just going to roll that over into the program based on the allocations that are identified within the agreement. So a certain percentage goes to the Community Works Fund, a certain percentage goes to the Greater Vancouver Regional Fund, and a certain percentage goes to the Strategic Priorities Fund. So just to let you know that this is what we're doing with the interest generated. Excuse me. So that's it for the gas tax.
Question.
Sure.
Just going back, we have an airport in Meadows. The ability to submit projects on behalf of the airport, is that in any way conditional on a particular kind of ownership structure? We have a rather odd ownership structure at Meadows Airport. It's owned through a society with two municipalities as sole members of the society. I know that's a pretty detailed question.
Yeah. But the answer is not, and there is no restrictions under the gas tax. So, I think the restriction is that the council and or board has to approve the funding. Excuse me. Right, so you've established an account, a gas tax account, right? So under the Community Works Fund, for instance, the money goes directly into that account. You decide how to spend that. It has to be an eligible project. So you take money out of that account and spend it on anything you want. And if the airport project is what you want to do, I mean, I think the high level sense is that it's for public use and public benefit, right? An airport fits that. So that money can go directly to that. If you're actually applying under the Strategic Priorities Fund, which you can't, so I'll take that back. just recalling where you're from. Yeah. Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about local government services program or program services, a small branch in our Victoria office that deals with a number of other small funding programs. Generally provincially or provincial federal funding programs. So the money comes from senior government and we administer the programs on behalf of them. So historically, it's a relatively new service that UBCM has provided. We've been doing it for, since 2001. We've done a number of different programs historically here. There's a listing of them. Here's the programs that we're currently involved with. So asset management planning, regional community forums, which is sort of a First Nation local government engagement program. Seniors housing and supportive initiative, this is age friendly. And strategic wildfire prevention initiative. I've got structural protection units down here. That's actually not a program. We actually own some assets that are managed by the wildfire branch. These structural protection units are basically trailers that deal with interface fire issues. So they're basically a big sprinkler units that can protect up to about 35 or 40 properties in an interface fire. So we own those. They're actually operated and maintained by wildfire branch. So I'll just briefly talk about these programs. The asset management planning program, $1.5 million program, currently opened for applications. So we're accepting applications right now. It is a cost-shared formula. We offer a $10,000 grant. To get $10,000, you have to provide $10,000 of your own money. That can be in kind or through other funding sources. You can actually use Community Works Fund as your source. It was launched late in the last year. It aligns quite well with some of the requirements under the gas tax program for asset management, and that was one of the reasons in our interest in helping run this program. The application deadline is March 20th. The Regional Community-to-Community Forums, this is a provincial federal program. It's a small program. It's about $100,000 per year, notionally allocated. I think there's been some great success out of this program. It's, as I mentioned before, really designed to engage First Nations and First Nations relationships within communities. So a lot of communities have taken advantage of this program. Small program, but highly successful.
So who would apply to that? Would you do it municipal by municipal, like the UBCM, who would apply for something that might benefit the whole region?
No, so it is done by individual local governments. Certainly, I think there's an opportunity if an individual local government saw something in a, you know, had a broader vision. You know, I think we'd be looking at that and working with you to determine how that would work. But as of, you know, today, it's individual local governments or regional districts. So some regional districts look at it on a regional perspective, but, you know, individual applications coming in. Senior Housing and Supportive Initiative, once again, this program's been around for a while. It's looking at sort of age-friendly planning and projects in communities. $20,000, once again, cost shared. we do have an intake for the fall of 2015. Strategic Wildfire Preventive Initiative. This has been a fairly significant program that we've run since 2004, after the wildfire season of 2003. I think since 2004, approximately $62 million has been funded through this program. Four program streams, you know, from planning to prescriptions to actually some of the operational treatments around interface areas within the province. Right now, there's a limited amount of funding, so it's actually having an open intake only for the planning component of it. We understand, and this is discussions with provincial staff, that there certainly is an interest to continue this program. Like a lot of these programs, they get funded sometime in March. So, you know, it's when the province sort of is looking at their fiscal year end and whether there's extra dollars available. That's usually when we get the phone call, are you interested? We're actually hoping that the province finds some more money to continue this program, because there's been a lot of local governments that feel they've really benefited from this program. So as I mentioned, it's a small group that manages these programs in the Victoria office. They're available to help you out if there's any interest in these programs, and there's our contact information. So I am officially done with the programs that UBCM is responsible for. I'm going to talk a little bit about the Building Canada plan, specifically the build. So I'll talk really quick. I've been dealing with questions throughout, so you got to give me some extra time, right? Some injury time on that. So the new Building Canada plan and the Building Canada fund, these programs are run and administered by the province. I talked about the gas tax fund. That's in the red there. And I mentioned that's legislated. So that's run by UBCM. Moving down to the blue is the new Building Canada fund, which I'm going to talk about now. Just one little piece. There is the P3 Canada fund. So that's public-private partnerships. $1.25 billion available. It is available. Prior to moving to UBCM, I was in contact with the executive director from P3 Canada. They were actually looking. They were out hunting for projects. So they've got a pot of money and they're just not spending it. My word of caution is with a P3, you really have to do your homework and you really have to understand the P3 process. You have to understand whether that's the right thing for the particular project you're doing, the service that you're providing, and your community. There are resources out there to get some more information. P3 Canada is one. Partnerships BC is another in BC. P3 Canada works very closely with Partnerships BC. They may give you a little bit of a biased opinion of a P3, but they certainly are very knowledgeable about P3s. Another resource is the Ministry of Community Sport and Cultural Development. In their infrastructure and finance division, they've got some knowledge on P3s as well. So anyway, I'm going to start talking really about the provincial territory infrastructure component and specifically the Small Communities Fund. That's available for those local governments under 100,000, which I believe everybody is under 100,000 in this room. Oh, except Coquitlam. Well, we'll talk a little bit about the other fees. Yeah. So the new Building Canada Fund Small Communities component, it's a small program, right? So $109 million of federal funding. That's it's a one-third, one-third, one-third cost share program. So the province puts in a third and local governments are responsible for a third. So it comes to about, $330 million total eligible cost. It's a 10-year program. So if you look at that program over 10 years, it's not very big. As I mentioned, communities under 100,000. There is an open intake right now. It closes February 18th. Local governments are allowed to apply for one project under that program. The province has identified that they are anticipating allocating 50% of the funding available in that first intake. Some pieces of information that are worthy of sharing with you. Eligible applicants, local governments are eligible. That's expanded within this program. First Nations are eligible now, as are provincial entities or public sector bodies, and previously private sector bodies, but that includes both non-profit and profit. I already mentioned eligible applicants may submit one application. Eligible project categories, it's fairly broad once again, although it does not include recreation, sport, tourism, or culture, or capacity building. So fairly broad project categories, but there are some limitations. A new rule that's come in from the federal government, so they've retooled their stacking rule. So the federal government is not prepared to put more than 33% into any project. Prior programs, it was 50%. So, a local government that was successful under this program would get 33% from the federal government. They could actually use their Community Works Fund, which is considered federal money, to top that up to 50% and then finance the remaining 17% on their own, right? So now local governments will be responsible for their 33% outside of the gas tax fund. So it's a significant change. As I mentioned, it's administered by the province. I've provided a contact for you here. The website has all the project information. Laird works with the Ministry of Community Sport and Cultural Development. He's actually come over for Ministry of Transportation, fairly familiar with both sides of the program. I won't get into the details of how the province actually splits responsibilities under this program. So that's all I have for the small communities component. I will go back, talk a little bit about, just because we do have Coquitlam here, who isn't eligible. The funding for national and regional projects, $9 billion, it's actually about $1.1 billion for BC. UBCM has had a big challenge getting information out of the federal government and the provincial government. We've recognized we've got a number of local governments that are over 100,000 in this province that don't have access to any funding under this envelope. There is no formal process. And really what we've seen is we've got some local governments that are just going out and talking to the federal government or the province on their own. What we've continually asked is, provide some form of process or some way that we can ensure that those local governments that are not eligible for the Small Communities Fund and or those local governments that have much bigger or significant projects can access this funding or have an opportunity to access funding. As of yet, we haven't really got a good response. We talked with the Minister of Community, Sport and Cultural Development yesterday really didn't get any additional information, but it's an area that we're continuing to work on, and we have some continuing concern. So that is it for my presentation. That gives a very high-level overview of the funding programs available to you. As I mentioned before, any questions with specifics as you move forward, UBCM and our staff, particularly in the Victoria office, are there as a resource for you and or your staff. So, or I've answered all the questions. Sorry, you got a question? Well, it's been, that concern has sort of been around for a long time, right? And particularly since the federal government has put in a number, right? A population sort of cap. The federal government doesn't seem to be overly concerned. I know, for instance, I can say that now because I work for UBCM, but I spent 15 years working for the province in these funding programs and, identifying that and working. There's very little ability for change at the federal level with these programs, it seems to be getting less and less over time. It's basically they're handing you a program and saying, take it or leave it. In the past, I think when the province was more flush with funding, they developed additional programs, Towns for Tomorrow, example, right, to focus in on small communities. That funding is kind of dried up at the provincial level. So, it remains a concern, and it's certainly a concern that we've heard from local governments, and I think it's a concern that UBCM carries on talking about. Just not sure, how much listening is being done, particularly at the federal level. Yeah, that's a long way of saying no, right?
I also think it's fair to say $110 million over 10 years for all communities in BC under 100,000 population applying for it is going to be a lot left out. It's just the nature and the size of that fund. The colleagues, I want to say thank you for everybody to come today. Thank you to Glenn. There's a lot of information that's been provided here, and I think the key thing is that that phone number and that email address, and keep that. UBCM staff is amazing at being responsive to us when we need to have questions answered.
question or we have things we want to talk about. So thanks very much. I really appreciate it.
And just, you know, that's Gary's number, not mine. So.
Yeah. There is a car park in the red zone on the fifth level of the parking lot license. License plate number is 858PSV. Please move it if it's your car. So that was given to me, so I have to say that. Next we're going to be assembling in the for the start of the plenary session. So in about 5 minutes. And well, thank you everybody for.
There's no handout, but the presentations are available on the LGLA website.